A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 23, 2003, entitled Institution and Community, in the series Religion and the Human Story. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 84 and Ephesians 3, verses 14 through 21. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Religion is a constant in human experience. It has always been. Every place and every time, people have been religious, because religion is that response to the mystery that encounters us in the midst of our lives. When we face those ultimate questions, when we wonder about that from which we've issued and what the issue of our lives will be, someone has a vision, someone has an illumination. The story of it is told, and it finds resonance in other minds and hearts. A community forms, and the community formed begins to live in that story, that fresh experience. And then the community living in that story begins eventually, gradually, to move away from the fresh blush of the experience. And thus it's necessary, in order to introduce others to the community and to the experience, to tell the story. But gradually, it's necessary as well to find ways to order that community in its life. And then the order and the structures that are put in place in order to allow the community to continue, those orders and structures take on greater importance. And eventually, that fresh blush of experience is over, and there is no one around anymore that remembers that experience or it entered into its vitality and its joy. And then it becomes a matter of telling the story and reliving the story. But now, increasingly, those forms and structures by which the community is shaped take on greater importance. And then, at some time or other, those forms and structures become, as it were, an end in themselves. And those who are charged with responsibility for the institution seek to preserve it and to perpetuate it and seek its stability and its solidity. And more energy and time and resource is put into the buoying up of the forms and the structures. And gradually, the initial experience that gave it birth is forgotten or becomes only a distant memory. And that which called that community into being in the first place is no longer the primary center of its life and its vision. Follow me? Isn't that what happens? It's natural. That's just plain what happens. That's kind of an inevitability. Because experience finally needs to be somehow or other structured. And in order to be passed on, needs to have those kinds of institutional forms that are somewhat objective and tangible. And so, eventually, that which was the first blush of experience is moved to second place in favor of the institutional forms that keep it going. But it's often been lost, the spirit bound, and that's just the way it is. Spirit without form fades. Form is necessary if spirit would be passed on. But the moment the Spirit takes form, the seeds of death are in the movement. That's just the way it is. And today, this community has to attend to its forms and its structures. Thank God for us, the institutional forms are minimal. And the amount of time and energy we give to it is minimal. But we have to do that. And we're going to do that today. So I thought it might be a good thing for us just for a few moments to think about institution and community and the relationship and the tensions. This community was born in a burst of grace and joy and renewal in the 70s. It simply exploded. The growth went off the charts. And there was a marvelous spirit of freedom, flexibility. And although we had inherited old forms, we had a whole new life. And there's always been here a marvelous relationship of trust between the pastors and the people, so that the people entrusted us simply to flow with the Spirit and to move and to catch the wave. And what happened is that we had a marvelous experience together. But we were working around our structures rather than through our structures. Because we had inherited a form of governance that came out of the 17th century. And when I began to address that issue with this congregation, it was the only time I addressed something in which there was real hesitancy to go along with the truth and me. Come on. I think there was a bit of hesitancy to change those old governmental structures because, after all, they had been around for a long time. And if I got too far out of line, they could always call those old structures back into function. But eventually, after 20 years, we changed our form of government. We went from the historic consistory made up of elders and deacons, the structure which was still in place, but was being worked around rather than through. We went to a form of government that reflected two basic concerns that I had, or two, I think, insights that I had. One was that a community like this has a ministry function and a management function. And in the old structure, the same people had to do both. And few people are gifted in both areas. And so one gifted in prayer yawned while we talked about the building, and ones who talked about putting on a new roof yawned while the others talked about prayer. Out of the new structure, finally we have a council for management and a council for ministry. This past Monday night, I was able to go to both. They don't usually fall on the same night. But in the operations council, we were putting the final touches on the budget. And then I went to the ministry council, and we were talking about people and program and all that kind of thing. And it was a paradigm, it was an example, a model to me of the kind of structure that we have now, where there are people who are gifted in one area, who are using their best gifts and strength in that area for the church, and people with other gifts in the other area working at the point of their strength as well. But then I knew one other thing historically. There are people who are all excited about the life of the congregation, and where there is a board of trustees, they're usually crusty, old, sort of elitist, well-heeled people. I mean, you could trace this back in the history of the church. So that the people who are all excited about doing things, and they make these proposals, and they come up against the board of trustees, and boom, dead. And I didn't want that to happen. So my suggestion was that from ministry and management, from either both councils, there come two people each to meet in the Board of Trustees, along with two people at large that you choose, so that the Board of Trustees would be a place where ministry and management would clash and collide and collude and work together. And you would have the final say about those at-large people, one of whom will chair that Board of Trustees. Now, I mention that because not many of you have the foggiest idea how we operate and our structures here, and you don't care, and I hope you never really investigate too thoroughly. But that's the way it works, and it's really a wonderful, wonderful, efficient and effective form of governance for a community such as this. It works. But today, when we attend to that minimal structure of institution, I want to call you to the valuing and the awareness and the continual commitment to community. Because forms and structures are necessary. But it's community that's where it really is. I want you to be reminded that we are a community because there is something that has called us together. And it is that which has called us together that creates the uniqueness of our life. And that which has called us together is that which we must nurture and must always cherish. The institutional forms can come and go, but that which is at the heart of our life, those are the things that we must be aware of and attentive to in order that we can keep that blush alive and fresh. We're a people who have been marked by grace. And that is not just a theological word. That means that we are a people who concretely open our arms to everyone and exclude no one. It is the concrete experience of being accepted in the name of God, by the grace of Jesus Christ, into this community, whoever you are, from wherever you come, whatever your history, you're welcome here. It says that rather eloquently in the back of our liturgy, and we print it every week. And people who read it for the first time continue to say, "That's good." We are a community that has not been content simply to reiterate old creeds and follow old ways. We have been a community with intellectual curiosity that has probed the faith, that has tried to come to an understanding through the use of critical rationality. We've used our minds and our reason in order to probe the history and the development of the tradition, so that what we confess and what we believe and that which shapes our lives is that which we can authentically own as our own. And we are a community that has been marked by care, by compassion, by genuine community, the arms of grace and love. That is what has drawn us together. And that is what has made our life what it is. A rather astute young man said to me not so long ago, "Dick, I really like what you do, but aren't you working yourself out of a job?" And I said, "Yes and no. If you mean, am I working myself out of a job if my job consists in leading a congregation that claims to hold absolute truths, that claims to possess the keys of the kingdom of heaven, that has an authoritarian rule over which people's lives are prescribed. If you mean that because Christ's community is the opposite of all of those things, that I'm out of a job, then you're right. Because we have given up here the claim to absolute truth. We have given up here that claim to authoritarian rule. We have given up here that kind of institutional dogmatism which has been so much a part of the traditional church scene. But I said to him, no, I haven't worked myself out of a job if you mean community. If you mean creating a place and a space where the spiritual life can be lived, where questions can be asked, where people can come together because we are social animals after all, where people can come together for mutual support, mutual encouragement, for the enhancement of our respective lives. If you mean creating a place where children can be baptized and nurtured, and where we can care for those who are in need and bury those whom we loved and lost a while, if you mean community in that sense, no, then I haven't worked myself out of a job at all. The sociologist Peter Berger, who has a great deal of interest in social organization and is a committed Christian as well, has written about the nature of the church as institution. And he speaks of the weak church and the strong church, and he questions whether a church, a community based like ours, is strong enough foundation to build upon. And in a very interesting discussion, he suggests that, quoting Dean Kelly, who wrote a book, Why Conservative Churches Are Growing, he suggested that Kelly was right in the sense that those churches that demand adherence to absolute truths, those churches that demand a very strict discipline, those churches that seek to be zealous in their evangelism and their missionary endeavor, that those churches grow. But I want you to know that what we have become is a very self-conscious endeavor. For that book by Kelly was written in 1972, and I got a hold of it, and one service I brought it into, actually it was a little sanctuary, I brought that book into the pulpit and I said, if this guy is right, we are doomed because we're doing everything wrong. Rather than the claim of absolute truth, rather than trying to harness you and to prescribe your behavior, rather than putting all of that heavy traditional obligation upon you, we were setting people free and throwing off the shackles. And I said, if Kelly's right, we can't possibly live because we are not building on that which has traditionally been a strong foundation for an institution. And Kelly was right in the sense that there will always be those who want dogmatism, who want absolutism, who want authoritarianism. It is easier, it is simpler. You don't have to think about it. You can go, you can be a sheep. There are always going to be those whose emotional needs will demand that kind of structure. But I was convinced then, and I am convinced now, that there will always be a minority of people for whom that won't work. And while Kelly was right in the sense that those kinds of churches have continued to prosper, he was not right in the fact that those who wouldn't go that way, those who didn't go that way simply had people drop off. So that, like Bishop Spong says, there are millions and millions of people out there, they're believers in exile. They've given up on the institution, they can't go that route, they won't go that route, and yet they still have the same spiritual need, the same quest, the same questioning. And I would suggest to you that it has been the unique nature of this community that we have been not for the majority and not for the masses, for a phrase I have used here for years, simply for a narrow niche. That narrow niche of people who refuse to give up on living before the face of God and opening their lives before the mystery of being. But who need to think about it, to need to probe it, who need to have an authentic grasp of what it is they are doing and awareness of why. That which has brought us together in the beginning was that thoughtful questioning, that intellectual inquiry that was wedded to a passionate offer of grace that issued in a compassionate community. Jack Miles, who's written God, a biography, and a book on Christ now, and is a very interesting, provocative writer, suggested in the New York Times Magazine some years ago that the resurgence of religion, and he talked about the fact that God question doesn't go away. But then he said something very interesting that caught my eye. He said, and there are very few that have the patience or the preparation to probe theologically to find the viability of an honest religious life today, but their importance is disproportionate to their number. And I said, ah, yes. Just a few who will continue to think and continue to trust and continue to love in order to make the viability of the practice of religion honest and authentic. In a mind that is critically aware, but with a heart that longs for God. Because I believe with all my heart that the heart cannot long dwell where the mind cannot follow. And so we have to attend to some things this morning, but that's minimal. But what has called us together and what creates us as a community, that is all important. It is that of which we must be aware. It is that to which we must continue to attend. It is that is our strength. Peter Berger acknowledged the fact that those who are part of a community like this recognize that they have chosen to be there. You don't have to be there. And you won't be damned if you leave. Those who are a part of a community like this are aware of the fact that they are part of a voluntary association. And if you voluntarily come, you may voluntarily leave, and God bless. But in the meantime, that which binds us together is that passionate quest for the eternal God, that mystery that embraces our lives. Finally, it's community. Paul got all choked up about it. In the church at Ephesus, he said, my prayer for you is that you'll be rooted and grounded in love, that you'll come to know the height and depth and length and breadth of the love of God in Christ Jesus. Because community is about love. We don't turn off our minds. We ask every question. We probe the edges. But we know finally it is in that gracious relationship of inclusivity that embraces all, where we live together in love. We know that is the environment, that is the ambience of grace, which enables us to pursue together and individually that quest, which is endemic to being human. And Paul says that you'd know that love, and then he's lost in wonder, love, and praise as he breaks out in doxology to the one who is able to do far beyond anything we've yet imagined, what ever dreamed of. To God be glory in the church in Christ Jesus. Paul got all choked up about it. He got all, well, he just soared as he thought about it. And so do I. I believe so deeply in what we are. I believe so deeply in the heart of this community. I look at this family. I've been with them, baptized their children, married their children, buried their loved ones over so many years. Where would you go if you didn't have a loving community in which to celebrate those holy moments of life? I sat with you, Barbara and Norman, on Wednesdays. Norman Timmer came alive, telling me his story, saying, "You changed my life." I said, "Norm, I didn't change your life. I was just the voice that articulated what you deeply believe." And Barbara told me when I left, he relaxed, and the head nurse came in and noticed a change, and he died. And so I come today and I hear Molly sing, "Whatever your situation, I will be your home. And when I move my hand, I will bring you home. And I cried. Because that's what it's all about.